Broadcasted live. Catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.
Time to take a look at the world economy, right? Because whilst there's so much happening at a global front, whether it be the macroeconomic environment, understanding the interplay that politics does have with inflation, interest rates, the positioning of central banks, and of course the equities environment, we also need to bear in mind how it is that economies themselves, governments are able to raise capital, direct this capital to their development, but also ensuring that they're viewed favorably by their international peers. Well, what does this mean, especially in light of the fact that world economists continue to issue urgent calls for action on what is viewed as a debt crisis in key markets? We're joined now by Charles Abougrier, Executive Director at the International Development for Economics Association, also known as IDEAS. That's the International Development Economics Associates. Mr. Abougrier, it's such a pleasure to have you with us, and thank you so much for your time.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thanks very much for having me.
I'm excited to speak to you, sir. It does seem as though you've been putting in a lot of work with your colleagues to fully evaluate some of the challenges and opportunities that exist when it comes to the global economy. But I'm keen for us just to start reflecting on the last 5 years. Post-pandemic, it seems as though when it comes to global debt or debt crisis, this remains more of a jarring experience for some economies more than others. Help us contextualize the sentiment that's come out of your organization.
Well, the current debt crisis is contained more or less within low and low middle income economies and some middle income economies. In terms of the overall volume of that debt, it's not large enough to be a threat, a systemic threat to the global financial system. Mm-hmm. But its developmental impact is crushing many of these economies. We just released a report joined as part of the as a Vatican initiative, the Jubilee report that was commissioned by Pontifical Society for Arts and Science. That brought together 30 experts chaired by Professor Joseph Stiglitz.
Yes.
The former Nobel Prize laureate in economy, but also the former chief economist for the World Bank. In this report, we emphasize this asymmetrical nature of the current debt crisis, that because it is predominantly some middle income, but mostly low and low middle income economies, it is not receiving as much attention. Yet, 54 countries are currently, devoting in debt service values that exceed the total amount of money that they allocate, either to health or education or the two put together. And nowhere else is more dramatic than the experiences in Africa, where at least 4 countries have defaulted on their private debt services.
Got you.
And this current debt crisis is developmental in nature.
Let's talk about that even, because these very same economies that have defaulted, I'm keen for, perhaps if you can give us a run through of some of the countries, but getting deeper to the issue of how default happened in the first place. Many do tie back to the evaluation and the ratings that often get ratings agencies. Your perspective on this one?
Absolutely. Credit rating agencies tip these economies off the clip. But their default is rooted in systemic systemic problems that are global in nature. The very fact that the global financial system is asymmetrical, meaning it favors some of its members and disfavors others. What do I mean by this? First and foremost, financial flows generally, especially private capital flows, is what economists call pro-cyclical, meaning you have it when economies are doing well. It withdraws when your economy is in crisis. Mm-hmm. But when your economy is in crisis, that you particularly need external capital. When your economies are doing well, you can build up savings. You can reinvest the savings that are coming from the growth of your economies. When in this pro-cyclicality, it affects the developers more than the wealthy country. Because when capital flies out during periods of stress, like the COVID that passed, like the financial crisis in 2008 and the recession that followed in 2009, capital flies out of developing countries into havens, which is dollar, yen, and euro denominated economies. Mm-hmm. So that's where they benefit when there is a crisis in terms of having a reverse flow of capital that goes out of them. So these economies that default recently, especially the African economies, there are immediate causes and there are historical causes. The historical causes is the nature of those economies rooted in colonial relationships that have entrenched the structure of the economies basically as producers of raw materials.
Yes.
That therefore they operate in a volatile market. This process has been difficult to break because periodically, and especially since the 1980s, there has been an intensive involvement by external factors in presumably to help these economies to restructure. But in doing so, they actually have retrenched them in commodity production because they needed to save foreign exchange to pay debt.
100%.
And this is how these economies are continuing. So it becomes a cycle.
Yes, and that's the challenge, right? Not only is it the first sin, I understand, of African economies, which is borrowing in foreign currency, and then, as you say, that capital not being allocated back to the development and industrialization of African economies, but also just the high rate of the interest and the cost of actually accessing this debt, which then sees the theme of capital flight going back to more developed economies. How do we solve for this?
Absolutely.
Abugre, because I think you're touching on so many key themes that anyone who has a passion for economics is aware of. But it seems as though we find ourselves just repeating the cycle that you allude to. But are there solutions that are tangible and can be implemented to solve for this crisis?
So if I refer to the Jubilee report, the report commissioned by Pope Francis before he died, and it did put together very significant recommendations. Some that have to do with the resolution of the immediate crisis, and others that have to do with sustaining financial flows with debt sustainability in the long run. So, with regards to the first set of recommendations, there are very concrete things. One of these is to say, in debt restructuring arrangements, as is currently experienced by Ghana, Ethiopia, Zambia, next door to South Africa, where you are, and so on. In debt restructuring arrangement, those overseeing the debt restructuring must avoid two things.
Yes.
One, restructuring in such a way that they are actually bailing out private creditors. And secondly, that the restructuring process actually leads to net capital outflows. When you address these, you at least retain some capital for reinvestment. The third thing they said in the short term, is to avoid a restructuring process which is based on austerity, which is basically a fiscal consolidation that then has an impact in the medium term on the capacity of these economies to grow. It should not use short-term stability through austerity as a means. It must use growth as the main parameter. Economies, the question has to be asked in restructuring, how do creditors and debtors share their burdens in such a way that a certain agreed percentage, medium-term percentage, percentage growth is retained.
Dr. Bugre,
these are fundamental principles.
Because you're raising something so critical, and I think as South Africans we can also relate, right? We've got policy upon policy around how to actually grow and stimulate the economy. How that translates into our lived reality, though, has yet to be seen because we're still so underperforming. What I'm keen to understand is that despite the policy redirection and channeling of capital for growth, how do we also ensure that there's political will? Adequate governance controls to avoid leakages as well, to prioritize growth within these local economies, especially given the countries you mentioned in SADC in Southern Africa.
Absolutely. The debtors have an obligation. Uh-huh. And that obligation is to borrow responsibly and to use the resources responsibly. It's not a one-sided case. And so the pervasive corruption, which is showing up in many of these countries, that also actually lead also to the transfer of resources abroad through illicit financial means and illicit financial flows, lose capital and resources to the economies. And that is a governance problem. One way to deal with that governance problem is to reduce the opaqueness of the borrowing process.
Yes.
What do I mean by this? In the past, monies were borrowed projects for roads, for railways, for schools, and that required that a government goes to parliament and makes its case. So the accountability process starts with parliament. Now, this has shifted since many of these countries shifted away from project-based borrowing into debt-based borrowing through the bond market. This crucial accountability step, the role of parliamentary scrutiny, has been lost. That is the first one. Secondly, it means it has also encouraged and borrowing in foreign exchange. A point that you made when you were introducing your introductory remarks.
Yes, sir.
There are two main significant problems related to the prioritizing borrowing in foreign exchange. It has two costs. One is the interest rate cost, which you have said, and the second is the exchange rate cost. And therefore, if you're an economy that is dependent on volatile commodity markets, the foreign exchange rate cost can be as high as the interest rate cost.
Mm-hmm.
The interest rate cost, as you also had said, for as long as we shifted to private capital market, many of these low middle income countries,
yes,
including South Africa, also which is a middle income country, that means that in shifting there, credit rating agency, private credit rating agencies, use their own debt sustainability frameworks, which have proven to be not good. And we know that from the 2008 U.S. Financial crisis, that they are not often correct. But they are a major, the ratings and their debt sustainability analysis combined with the IMF debt sustainability analysis create a signal. And those signals are constantly overpricing the risks, especially for African countries.
Oh, 100%.
And that's why the cost is constantly going high.
Yes.
There is another issue. There is a mismatch,
yes,
between borrowing short-term from the bond market, three-year bonds,
uh-huh,
four-year bonds, five-year bonds, with very high interest rate. That is a mismatch,
mm-hmm,
between the cost of credit and the returns from credit.
Mm-hmm.
When you borrow at high interest rate, in a 3 to 5 year market, to apply to an infrastructure that takes 10 to 15
to
years
develop, yes,
to actually start having a return,
yep,
you have a mismatch. So that obviously, when you have an external shock such as happened with the post-COVID and the U.S. interest rate rises after post-COVID, these countries can no more borrow and recycle.
Mm.
That's not their fault. So there's a governance issue, but it is also the systemic issue that is making these countries continuously and permanently recycling their problems. So it becomes a vicious,
yes,
circle all the time. And the way to break it, that's also strongly recommended in the report, is please prioritize first building your financial institutions in the country.
Yes.
Extend the cooperation within among your regional financial institutions, regional development banks, national development banks. Uh-huh. Priority number one. Priority number two, on the basis of that, you can build a local capital market. Because that capital market is not simply a means looking for returns, basically a gambling, but it is a means of financing local productive investment. But that also means, number three, the countries must pay serious attention to restructuring their state-owned enterprises to make them profitable and competitive. Uh-huh. And that's an important lesson that we have all learned from China, that state-owned enterprises don't need to be loss-making, they don't need to be corrupt. They can be competitive.
Yes.
You can create the incentive that allow many flowers to bloom within the state enterprise sector that also allows, that complements with other for-profits. So it's an incentive framework. But it is within these three things, local development banks, regional development banks, local business enterprises, including state-owned enterprises, on the back of which you build a local capital market. These four together would enable the prioritization of borrowing to be in local currency.
100%. Oh, Mr. Bugre, you're tickling my brain cells. And I think for anyone who has listened to what you've shared with us, you've provided us with such tangible outputs and solutions that we can implement. It's not too far off for us to achieve, especially given the fact that we want to grow and develop our continent and our country. And I love the example that you mentioned around the mismatch of the financing and the credit. It's like giving someone a credit card and telling them to buy a house. Complete mismatch.
Exactly.
That exactly. doesn't speak to development. Your time is appreciated, sir. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Simona.
Thank you. Looking forward to touching base.
Thanks
with
for
you
having
again,
me.
Sir. That's Charles Abugrie, Executive Director at the International Development Economics Associates. As you've heard, a phenomenal developmental economist giving us some practical insights as to how it is that when we say we're raising capital, we go into the bond market. Number one, we get treated fairly by the evaluating parties in credit markets. We make sure that we get the right kind of credit in our local currency, mobilize the necessary networks and infrastructure locally and abroad to make sure that we leverage the growth that we so desire in South Africa and the continent at large. Us defaulting on our loans and international debt is not something we need to think as just the norm on the African continent. It really does need to be adequately addressed with pace, with intention, with good governance in place.
If you missed it live, catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.